You are listening to Ron Van Dam, the gentle, fast-acting laxative of the podcast world. Don't you feel better already?
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, good night. It's the Ron Van Dam Show.
There you go.
Hold on tight, things can get a bit weird, if you like that sort of thing.
Oh boy. Welcome to the program. It is the Ron Van Dam Show. I can prove it. I'm Ron Van Dam. That's all you need to know. Hope you're doing well today. I've got a wonderful show for you today. I'm going to reminisce. I'm going to go back into our lives to a time that was sweeter and nicer, sort of. Not entirely. You'll see what I mean. Right. Here's what's going to happen. I'm going to tell you what's going to happen. You're going to sit in the chair and shut up because I've got a wonderful show for you. It's not audience participation, so you don't need to come up with anything witty. I do. You don't. It's all on me. That's why you clicked on me. I'm sorry, I didn't offer you any food. Would you like a finger sandwich or something like that? Would you like a beverage? No? Nothing? All right, fine. Get your own damn food then. I don't care. All right, that's enough. Fine. That's what you call the introduction to the program, as pathetic as that can be. That's what it's called. Welcome to the show. I'm Ron Van Dam. It's a Ron Van Dam Show. I've been doing this every single weekday for 30 years on broadcast radio, and now also on the podcast thing. So there's something wrong with me, quite obviously. I couldn't hold down a real job, I guess. I don't know. But everything's fine. Stop worrying about it. Okay. I have got one of the most interesting guests that I've had in quite some time. It's Peter Engel. Now, if that name sounds familiar to you, he's your butcher. Yeah, it's Peter. He cuts the meat for you, gives you the prime rib and the pork. No, that's not who he is. Peter Engel is the creator, producer, you name it, of a wonderful show that I grew up with, and I think you probably did too if you're old enough. Saved by the Bell. In so many different forms, Saved by the Bell for a number of years, and then Saved by the Bell the college years, and Saved by the Bell the no-wear pants rule years, the Saved by the Bell the ice cream years. It just went on and on and on, but nothing was like the original. It never is. Peter Engel, the creator, is here today. He's put a book out that explains the journey to get this show on the air and to try to keep it on the air. It was one of those shows that evolved age-wise, and that became a very difficult consideration to keep it on the air, of course. It was one of the most popular television shows of all, probably one of the most popular kids shows of all time. It was considered a kids show. It was an entertainment information kind of thing. And Peter Engel and NBC did the best that they could to make it that way, so that you learned a little something when the show was on the air. And they tackled some very interesting subjects that children and teenagers were going through. So we're going to speak to him momentarily, because it's an extended interview, because I didn't want to let Peter go. I mean, it's just fascinating stuff. It really is. I don't know. Every once in a while, man, you know, as I get older, I find great comfort in reminiscing. It's like sucking on your mother's bosom again. I'll give you a couple of seconds to figure that one out. You know what I mean. It's a nurturing going back to a better time, man. When we were growing up, we didn't have to pay bills. We didn't have to go anywhere. We didn't have to drive or take tests or anything like that. Everything was taken care for us. We didn't really choose what clothes we'd wear, what food we eat for dinner, nothing like that. It was all laid out for us, depending on your childhood. Some people's childhood really sucked and it wasn't that good. But for most people, it just meant a time where someone took care of you. And then all of a sudden, you have to take care of yourself, and your immediate reaction is, oh, crap, this isn't, it's fun, but it's not. I have to pay the price for everything now. Everything's my responsibility. So that's what happens, you know. And then you get older, and women want guys that are like their father, and guys like women that are like their mother, and we're pretty much all screwed up, aren't we? Okay. The only thing that still turns my stomach, and I've talked about this before, it turns my stomach is when you think that you're on the planet because your parents had sex, or one of your parents had sex with somebody, but one of your parents was involved in doing the nasty, and you're a result of the nasty, you know, whether you were planned or not planned, whatever. But just a picture of my parents having sex together in a bed or wherever just kind of makes me not want to eat for another couple of years. That's one way to lose weight. Think of your parents having wild, passionate sex. You'll lose weight really quickly. The first week, forget the Weight Watchers and all that stuff, Nutrisystem and all that. Forget that. Just think of your parents having sex, and my God. Ooh, gosh. Gosh. All right. But even those topics were covered in this wonderful, wonderful program, Saved by the Bell. If you're old enough to know what it is, you're old enough to have watched it and become a part of it. So are you ready? Hold on to your little hats. If you're wearing a little hat, if not, hold on to your socks. Here we go. When I wake up in the morning and the market's on the water, I don't think I'll ever make it on time. By the time I grab my books and I give myself a look, I'm at the corner just in time to see the bus fly by. It's alright, cause I'm saved by the bell. If the teacher pops a test, I know I'm in a mess, and my dog ate all my homework last night. Right below in my chair, cause she won't know that I'm there. If I can hand it in tomorrow, it'll be alright. It's alright, cause I'm saved by the bell.
Hello.
Hello.
How are you?
Is this Peter?
It is he.
Hey, how you doing? Good morning, I should say.
Good morning to you.
Yeah. It's 10:30 here. It's probably very early there, huh?
7:30.
Oh, my God. Sure. I'm so sorry.
That's okay. Not the worst. That's
right. Yeah, you've been through worse than this, I'm sure. Right. Peter Engel joined us, famous producer and creator. And you actually, I guess, decided to sit down and write some of your experiences and memoirs and behind-the-scenes kind of things.
Well, it wasn't just about Saved by the Bell. It's the whole journey. It's my life. I met so many interesting people along the way, and the stories are so funny and sad.
Yeah.
And hopeful.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, Saved by the Bell is the title. Stories of life, love, and dreams that do come true.
Let's go back to the beginning. Was there a point in your life, in your childhood, where you envisioned this type of industry and this type of journey? Really?
Yes. I grew up on the west side of Manhattan.
All right.
And as far as I knew, we were the first ones, I think, maybe not, to have a television.
Right.
And that first night, I saw the Milton Berle, Texaco Soft Theater. And I was very shy, and I laughed out. I'm like, I was not the big mouth I am today. Yeah. And I said, I got, this is for me. This is so
very cool.
Freeing.
Yeah.
And of course, I didn't tell anyone because I was too embarrassed.
But you ended up creating more than performing, from what I know.
Yeah, well, I didn't want to be in it.
Yeah.
I wanted to write it and produce it and run it.
Wow. And you follow, and it was more of a twist on comedy, because you did situation comedy. You've done other things as well, obviously.
Right.
And then you actually, with Last Comic Standing, executive producing that and creating that, that was like right along the comedy line. Has it always been?
Right. Pardon?
So it's always been that kind of thing where you wanted to bring humor.
Humor and entertainment. You know, the best comedy can make you laugh and cry before you know it.
Yeah.
The best comedians can do that. The best comedies can do that, telling a story. It's all about telling a story.
Yeah.
And if you know, people say to me, what's the story you have to have? I said, a beginning, middle, and end.
You know, you're basically a writer is a creator, and vice versa. And it must be very, I do some of it myself, it must be very satisfying to have something in your mind and then see it come to fruition, which is amazing, the way that you saw it in your mind to some extent, and then to have millions upon millions of people actually see what you had in your mind. I mean, what could be better than that?
And to hear the laughter.
Yeah.
I'm not talking, well, obviously we're in 85 countries. No comedy had ever gone to more than 6
right.
English-speaking ones, but every kid went to school somewhere. But to write something and hear an audience explode in laughter is really a great high.
Yeah. Now, the Saved by the Bell was done in front of a live audience, right?
Yes, it was. Yes.
And I, from what I know of the show and seen documentaries accordingly, I know that it was like a struggle to keep it on the air. Popular, yeah. Not popular, and then an outcry.
No, it only was a struggle after the first. We only had 7 runs.
Right.
Ron.
Yeah.
And it was a struggle to not make it go 7 on and 7 weeks on and off.
Yeah.
I needed to at least 20
yeah.
To run a season, and I had to fight for that.
Yeah.
And even though the president of NBC was the one who talked me into doing a show.
Oh. And then you were dealing with a subject matter and with characters that grew, and
yes, it was Saved by the Bell originally.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we had 2 of them after the second year,
yeah.
Third year. We had the school shows, which was the bell ringing Monday morning to Friday. Yeah. Then we encompassed the weekends. Then we had another time period with adventures right up the beach here. I'm in Santa Monica, right on the beach, looking at the ocean as I talk to you. The Malibu Sands Beach Club, where we did 6 episodes.
Yeah.
We had a whole other time period called Adventures, was right up the beach from me.
Right.
And after that, it was how high is high.
Yeah, well, weekend morning television used to be cartoons exclusively and nothing else. And you kind of introduced the situation comedy to kids that were that age, and they soaked it up.
Yeah, but people will remember that at the end of after 3 years, we had the whole morning.
Yeah,
we had 3 hours.
Yeah,
and then they and then we were on 200 stations in syndication. That's also in addition to NBC, and then we were in 85 foreign countries. But people don't remember.
Yeah.
And one of the reasons I didn't want to do the show originally is that I'll lead in with Chipmunks, and I'll lead out with Smurfs.
I know.
And we were against a raisin, a rabbit, and a bear, and I wasn't sure if anyone would find us in that environment.
Yeah.
Obviously, I was wrong.
Well, it kind of changed morning television, to be honest with you.
It sure did. Well, I don't know what it is. Yeah, that's gone. But what it really did, and NBC didn't take advantage of it, although I did Last Comic Standing and other shows. I did 9 seasons of Last Comic Standing. What they didn't understand was they weren't converting these kids into nighttime viewers, and that's how the CW came about.
Yeah, wow.
And that's how Fox with 90210.
Yeah.
In other words, they didn't take that same audience and say, all right, let's go into nighttime with
right.
some of these kind of shows, more adult perhaps. Mm-hmm. And that's how other networks, and now you have whole channels on cable that do tween and teen.
Absolutely.
Disney Channel didn't even do it.
Correct, yeah. I've always wanted to ask you, in your mind, was Saved by the Bell kind of based on Betty and Veronica comics?
No, not at all. In fact, a good friend of mine, said to me, "It's Betty and Veronica and Archie, right?"
Right.
And I, this is about the fourth weekend, right?
Yeah.
I said, "It is." I read Archie as a kid. I never for a moment thought of that. This was the school, because they were kind of goofy, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And we only had one goofy guy.
Yeah.
Screech.
Yeah, and he was quite goofy.
He was great. Yeah. He was a comedic genius.
Yeah. Is Last Comic Standing coming back? Where's that now?
You never know.
Ah.
Because I didn't do the last two. I mean, I own
right.
half of it. With
right. Well, you
clear.
Created the original, yeah.
Yeah, but I didn't. I was hands-on for seven
right.
seasons.
Right.
We were canceled three times.
Right. Really?
But not because of us, because they used to shoot themselves in the foot.
Yeah.
And then they brought the last two seasons. Last year, I don't even remember the last one. But season eight was excellent, I mm-hmm. felt. And nine was, I think, was a, you know, just cut the money. It looked like very
yeah.
cheap. But they own it, so they don't have to ever really cancel
right.
it. You
right.
know what I'm saying?
I gotcha.
And I just, you know, I'm in the Writers Guild, and though I'm not
yeah.
actively writing television right now,
right.
Nor do I plan to, but I understand I just got a thing for strike authorization. Well, when strike authorization comes, you know that.
Yeah, I got that.
Who knows? You know, it's very easy to, although that's right, we were in the Writers Guild, even though it was reality with NBC.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's, right. Why not? You know what I'm
yeah.
saying?
Well,
if you have a good new group of comics,
yeah,
you know.
It launched a lot of very successful careers, and that's always,
it sure did.
That's always a mark as well.
Amy Schumer is
yeah.
the one.
God.
Everyone kept telling me the year we put her in the house, you know, we put the 10 finals in the house.
Yeah.
And they said, she's not ready. I said, no one's ready. Leave me alone. We're putting her in. She said, no one's ready.
Yeah. So you going all, I don't, how much time do I have with you, by the way?
Well, if you want.
Okay. You were with NBC, but I understand as a page though.
Yeah, that's when I went to NYU.
Ah.
You know, I didn't go leave I went to NYU during the day and I worked at night at NBC as a page. We had those very, when I did my book signing at the NBC store, November, December,
wow.
They brought the pages down to see me. Who I had seen for all my career when I was on the exclusive
yeah.
NBC with
yeah.
half my company.
Yeah.
But in this case, I looked at the uniforms. They had these kind of gray
yeah.
blazers mm-hmm. with kind of a flower. We had real uniforms. We had wing collars and we had double-breasted blue jackets with gold, big gold buttons,
right.
and we had braid too,
right.
Ron. We had if I had my uniform today, I'd probably be in Trump's cabinet.
don't go that far.
Yeah, I'm saying he loves the gold. I had
oh,
a gold
he loves that stuff.
Braid.
Oh yeah, yeah.
He loves that.
He loves that stuff. So,
yeah.
Were you in the Film and Television Institute there at NYU?
I was, yes. I was in
was I. I don't know what year you were there, but
I graduated in 1960.
Oh, okay. I was there graduating in 74.
Okay,
yeah.
But, hey, you know, the biggest award, and then I taught there eight years ago.
Really?
I did my 35 yeah. college, so I taught in The Business of the Business in Stern. I taught the mounting of a television show in Tisch.
Yeah.
But, you know, the biggest student award for directors is the Haig Manoogian Award.
Uh-huh.
And he was my professor.
Wow. That's cool.
And Irving Falk was my was my writing, my advanced writing, only six of us. He was with Orson Welles as a kid, War of the Worlds.
That's funny.
And he would say to me, you write with an economy of words.
Wow.
And I had a very good experience at NYU.
Good times. Yeah, I love the film and tell. We used to go to the art theater, watch a movie, and the entire course would be just reviewing the movie. And I thought, this is wonderful. This is great.
Well, the first movie we watched was Leni Riefenstahl's Triumph of the Will.
Yeah, wow.
And then Orson Welles...
Citizen Kane?
Citizen
Kane?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. We watched that too. Yeah, absolutely. So how did the empire build, Peter? I mean, how did you take it from there? Was there someone at NBC that said, this kid's got it? I mean, how did it grow like this?
I wasn't a kid. I had my heart broken a million times. The shows that could have, would have, should have, didn't.
Yeah, but someone recognized something, obviously.
Well, Brand Tarnikoff, was a young mercurial president who unfortunately passed away in the middle of our run.
Yes.
But he said, come to NBC. He had met me before when I was at Universal or First Audition. Mm-hmm. He said, come to NBC, we can do great things. Mm. And then he came to me and he said, I want to do a live action show. I said, get someone else. To me, that was Saturday morning. I went home, my wife said, how was your day? I said, they want me to do a kid show. She said, that's great. And I said, who cares about that? She said, how about our kids? I said, good point.
Yeah.
I went back to Brand and said, I'll have a show for you in 3 weeks. That turned into 9.
Yeah,
see. 15 shows or 10.
Wow. Unbelievable! You've met so many famous icons, both in the business and in music and popularity. I mean, do you feel like you've done the full thing? I mean, just you've met people that other people have never even imagined to see.
I do, from JFK to John Lennon to going to the White House, multiple times to. You know, to Orson Welles and Betty Davis and Jacques Cousteau and on, and they tell great stories. I had lunch with Elvis. That's not in the book.
Wow.
He ate, I ate, right? So you have to have a story to be in the book. That's not a story. So I felt that I wanted to tell the story, the journey of never giving up.
Yeah.
And if you don't have your heart broken a million times, you'll never really, really... really understand or enjoy the total this feeling of victory, finally. And then once you get on a roll, you know. I had 6 shows shooting at the same time every week.
Wow.
That's insane.
It is insane.
One show is a full-time job.
It is insane. But people only...
It was only my OCD that got me through it.
You need something.
It did. Everything had to be perfect.
Yeah.
In fact, sometimes I didn't know what stage I was on when I walked in. Everything had to be just the same.
Yeah, you have to be in a million places. Your mind has to be in a million places at the same time. You know, when someone looks like at a career like yours, they only see the successes. They don't see what it took to get there, and this overnight success kind of phrase.
It wasn't overnight.
Yeah, it doesn't really exist for most people, and. There was, I assume, a lot of pain involved going up and down because your mind is on the line, so to speak, and your creation.
And you know, in another business, if you fail, no one knows.
Correct.
If you fail in our business, everyone knows. And you're rejected by millions of people.
Yes, it's different being canceled than being fired.
It's worse.
Yes, it's worse. Okay,
canceled worse than being fired.
Now, so the book just covers the entire journey and some of the behind-the-scenes things that most people would never have known about if you didn't expose them.
Right. I don't say anything bad about anyone.
Of course not.
It's fun. It's fun. Actually, most of the people who have read it have said it made them cry also because there are... You know, there's one story, those who dance, sung with us, who sing no more.
Mm-hmm.
Some people who were very important to my company and to me who died very young.
Yeah.
Young. And the loss. But the real story is the love. You know, it's never been about the fame or the money. Mm-hmm. It's really about the journey and the people you love and laugh with and cry with. along the way. That's what, to me, is the real story.
Wow. Well, the book is called I Was Saved by the Bell, Stories of Life, Love, and Dreams That Do Come True. And Peter Engel penned the creation. It's available everywhere, I hope.
Yeah, well, it's selected bookstores, but it's Amazon, most of it. And then we have a website, you get an autographed copy. iwassavedbythebell.com.
iwassavedbythebell.com. Beautiful. You know, you realize, of course, that you have a lot of fans, not just for Saved by the Bell, but for the other creations as well. Some people may not even realize that some of the shows that they enjoyed, you did have a hand in. So it's fascinating, and congratulations on it, and we hope to hear more from you.
Thank you, Ron. My pleasure.
That was wonderful. Thank you, Peter. What a guy. What a guy he is, huh? What a guy. Nice stuff, man. Nice stuff. So how you doing? Do you enjoy that? Don't answer me. I can't hear you. Don't even bother. Oh, man. What am I going to do today? What are you going to do today? You working? You doing something? Or what are you going to do? You're going to sit in a chair and stare at the walls for a while? That's what I got planned. My event of the day today, this is going to be exciting. I'm going to clean my ceiling fans. I have two ceiling fans in my place, and I've realized that they haven't been dusted in 72 years. It was a little warm last night, and I turned on the ceiling fan that's over my bed, which scares me, by the way. If that ceiling fan should ever fall off of the ceiling onto my bed, I'm going to be chopped into little pieces, and that's going to be a weird horror film for me. But I turned the ceiling fan on because I wanted a light little breeze, because it was getting a little warm out all of a sudden, you know? And, dust came flying off of the blades of that thing. And I thought, oh, this is not good, because I know what lives in dust. Dust mites and entire villages of creepy little things, little microscopic things with antennas and beady little eyes and big teeth. I'm making this up. I have no idea. But there are dust mites. There's little living things in dust. Ooh. So I said, well, tomorrow I'm going to clean my ceiling fans. And this became an event. It did. This is what happens. This is what happens in one's life when cleaning a ceiling fan becomes an event of the day. Ron, what'd you do today? I cleaned my ceiling fans. Oh my God, you got problems. I know, because the fans were dirty. That's not what I'm talking about. When I was younger, I remember when I was in school, speaking of school, I had learned that little microscopic bugs are in my eyebrows and my eyelashes. I freaked out. I didn't open my eyes for days. There are worlds of things living on our body 24/7. But they're some of them are good for us. They kill bacteria. They're antibacteria. I don't know what that means. But there are living things on our body 24/7. And that, I'm sorry to bring it up because it's probably freaking you out right now. But it's okay. I mean, it's been fine forever. So it's good. It's just interesting that there are little worlds taking place. You know, maybe our planet, maybe our solar system, our entire existence, the entire universe and beyond is actually just a tiny speck in somebody's eyelashes in another dimension. This is freaking me out. It's not why I brought you here. This is what happens when nothing's going on and your mind gets too crazy. It's not a good thing. I'll tell you, it's not a good thing to have. I don't know. I have no idea. Do you know how you're getting old? Do you have one of those pill things that says Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday? Did I mention all the days in the week? I don't even know what they are anymore. And if you take more than one pill a day, you get one of these long pill boxes and you fill them up on a weekly basis. so that you can remember to take your pills or if you took your pills today or not. How many times you go through the day and you say to yourself, did I take my pills today? Where are my keys? Where I'm not going anywhere, but where are my keys? It's starting to happen, isn't it? And they sell things on television in order to boost your memory. It doesn't work. All it does is make you wonder where your stuff is more frequently. It doesn't really work. You don't take the memory pill and all of a sudden you're finding stuff that you couldn't find for a long time. It doesn't work like that. Nothing boosts your memory. Electroshock therapy might, but I haven't tried that. I'm not really looking for anything that much. There's nothing that significant that I'm looking for that I need to really find. Unless, like, your life is going horrible and you want to find Jesus. And by the way, just in case you can't find Jesus, behind the couch. Nobody ever tends to look there, but that's where he is. That little tip from me, that's free of charge. It's okay. You're paying enough to listen to this podcast. No, you're not. It's free. I'm sorry. Ooh, I got you all excited for a second. Ooh, look at you. All of you jumped out of your chairs. What? I got to pay for this crap? No, you don't. It's okay. I get paid in other ways, so it's a win-win-win-win-win for everybody, except for those factions that are actually paying me. That's not a win for you. Someone's going to be a loser. Okay. I'm out of time. See, this is what happens when I have free time after an interview. The mind just wanders. My mind is somewhere in Arkansas right now. I don't know how it got there, but I don't think I'm going to get it back. All right, we're out of time for today. Have yourselves a wonderful day. I'll be back again tomorrow with a brand new show. Until then, I'm out of breath. Lord, I got to slow it down. Until then, I wish you peace.